Thumbtack presents the ins and outs of caring for your home. Out, procrastination, putting it off, kicking the can down the road. In, plans and guides that make it easy to get home projects done. Out, carpet in the bathroom. Like, why? In, knowing what to do, when to do it, and who to hire. Start caring for your home with confidence. Download Thumbtack today.
At Designer Shoe Warehouse, we believe that shoes are an important part of, well,
everything. From first steps to first dates, from all-nighters to all-time personal bests.
From building pillow forts to building a life.
For all the big and small moments that make up your whole world, DSW is there. And we've got just the shoes. Find a shoe for every you from brands you love at brag-worthy prices at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Waiting for the best deals? Spring Black Friday savings are here. Shop early access now at Blinds.com and save big on new custom window treatments. At Blinds.com, shopping online for custom window treatments doesn't mean sacrificing on service, selection, or style. As the number one online retailer of custom window treatments, Blinds.com has hundreds of options to fit any decor and budget. Choose from stylish roller or bamboo shades, blackout options, and more. We even have motorized shades for your patio. DIY, or let our experts handle the heavy lifting. Blinds.com has you covered with free virtual consultations. We'll even send a pro to do the measure and install. Try before you buy with free samples delivered to your door. With over 25 million windows covered, every order's backed with Blinds.com's 100% satisfaction guarantee. Shop Blinds.com's Spring Black Friday Early Access now for up to 40% off with minimum purchase, plus a free measure. Save up to 40% at Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Today's podcast is sponsored by Midi Health. At any given time, 61% of adult women say they want to lose weight. But for many, that's easier said than done. If you've had trouble losing weight, don't lose hope. Midi Health uses a deep understanding of women's hormones and a combination of weight loss medications to create a customized plan for each user. Midi Health can help you achieve more effective and sustainable weight loss by addressing hormone imbalances. Midi can also prescribe proven weight loss medications that help you experience reduced appetite and increased feelings of fullness. When paired with hormone optimization, you're not just managing your weight, you're also supporting your body's natural processes, which means you can overcome those weight loss plateaus that in the past have been so difficult to move beyond. So if you're ready to combine the power of hormones with the power of weight loss medications, visit joinmidi.com today. Discover how this innovative approach can lead you to lasting success. That's joinmidi.com.
It's great to be along with you for another program, Sports on a Sunday Morning, coming to you live from downtown St. Louis, where it is spectacular outside. Stuart McMillan just gave us the weather forecast. Bill Dager's been talking about it all morning. This is a beautiful day in St. Louis. I just drove through Forest Park on my way here just to take it all in, man. City living. And it looks great. Forest Park, you got joggers out there, you got strollers, dogs, people playing golf, and it was actually a little crisp at that time. Windy, probably around 60. What's the high today? My goodness. What are we talking about here? 78, maybe 80? Look.
Bill Dager says 81.
Oh, my gosh. Bill, I really like Bill. Here's what I want you to do. Just tell a little bit of a lie, but it's okay. Tell your friends that we get great weather in St. Louis. This is how it is, man. 80 degrees and sunny on Sundays. That's how we do it around here. Come on, get over here on the weekend and take in some sports. We're going to have a great, great day. Yesterday was a great day. I was at the Frozen Four, saw the national championship. Western Michigan won over Boston University 6-2, but it was tighter than that, and it was a great crowd, just great people all throughout St. Louis enjoying. They're probably still celebrating a Broncos win and the national championship. So it was fun to have all of them here. I stayed up late last night and watched the Blues lose in a shootout. That was a tough one to take, man. I mean, they came back, tied the game, went to overtime, and then had five different chances to win that thing in the shootout and could not, and lost it in the seventh round. But they get a point, and the tiebreaker scenario is basically this. The Blues need Calgary to lose. That would make it very easy. If Calgary loses in regulation, the Blues are going to get the job done here and clinch the playoffs. If they get a point, then the Blues need a point to clinch on Tuesday. If the Blues see Calgary win in regulation today against San Jose, the Blues need to win in regulation to clinch it. If they end up at this point, you know, sitting around and waiting for Calgary, it gets agonizing, but it is what it is. I mean, they haven't been able to finish the job here, and they lost yesterday to Seattle 4-3 in a shootout. Stayed up and watched that after a night of hockey at Enterprise Center. It was a good day. And before that, the Masters. Holy smokes, what a what an unbelievable pairing that is today at 1:30. Rory McIlroy going for the career slam, finally getting the green jacket, and look who's right on his heels, Bryson DeChambeau. Same thing as last year at the U.S. Open, Pinehurst. Now they do it again. So Dan Rudin's going to join us here in a few minutes to talk about that. And yes, the three matchups here in downtown St. Louis today. It starts with the Cardinals at 1:15. The Cardinals taking on the Philadelphia Phillies. Yesterday, the Cardinals lost by a final of 4-1. We talked about this last week, that it was early in the season, and unfortunately that means that the offense is going to regress and come back to normal. Doesn't mean the offense is bad. It means they got off to a crazy good start, and you can't sustain that forever. So they were eventually going to fall back, and the hope was that the pitching would be able to improve. Well, the pitching has improved, but the offense fell way back. So the last three games now, the offense has not been there, and they got a win out of it. But they lost the extra inning game to the Pirates in 13, and the reason they lost the game was not because Ollie Marmol pulled Eric Fetty with a no-hitter. It has nothing to do with it. He wasn't going to pitch more than another inning anyway, and he already had walked four leadoff hitters. The reason they lost the game is the offense wasn't there. They didn't hit. They had a lot of opportunities in extra innings to get the extra run, and they couldn't do it. Eventually, the Pirates are going to get one if you give them that many chances. So they did, and they won the game. And then they didn't have any offense on Friday, but Andre Pallante didn't care. He just shoved, man. He looked great. He beat Aaron Nola, and the Cardinals won that game 2-0. Sleepy Phillies team, I get it. They went to bed at like 5 in the morning. Don't care. Nobody feels sorry for the Cardinals when they have to go to bed at 3, 4 in the morning, or they have to deal with rain delays or travel or injuries. Nobody. Nobody feels sorry for the Cardinals, including some of their own fans, actually. So I don't feel sorry for the Phillies for 1 second. Cardinals won the game. Next day, you know, Miles Michaelis, who I advocated to maybe go back to the bullpen or go to the bullpen for the first time, be a long reliever, put Mats in the rotation, or maybe even dip into Memphis and get Michael McGreevy. They stick with Michaelis. He's better, but he gives up a couple of early runs. Maybe something to build on for him, I hope. 5 innings, gives up 3 runs on 3 hits. Cardinals lose the ballgame 4-1 again. Not Michaelis' fault. They don't hit. Cardinals don't hit yesterday. They don't get enough. They had 9 hits, but they don't have key hits, and they only end up with 1 run. And then today, you know, today you're facing one of the best pitchers that the Cardinals face in Zach Wheeler. They're going to counter with Matthew Liberatore, and perhaps they can find a way to get that win. Then at 2 o'clock, the St. Louis Battlehawks are playing at the Dome. That's a whole different world and environment over there. Those fans love the Battlehawks. They love football. I saw ESPN.com wrote up something about St. Louis being an NFL town, and that's why the Battlehawks do so well. That's right. We are an NFL town. And we didn't lose the team. That team got taken from us. It had nothing to do with us. Zero to do with St. Louis. We supported that NFL team, and it got taken. So all we're doing is just doing what we do. Rooting and cheering on a football team in the Dome. And that's why it's such a great environment. They're going to keep on winning, too. They play the D.C. Defenders today. Tough team. See if they can handle them today. And then finally, City. City's got to find a way to score goals. But they play tonight against Columbus. And guess what? An 80-degree day. People are probably making plans right now to get out and have a few pops and enjoy and put on some sunscreen and just enjoy the day out there in downtown West. And then head in and have some fun tonight. I'll be there, 6 o'clock, City against Columbus. Should be awesome. Y98 FM will have that. Regardless of how they play, I think people have fun there. But at some point, you got to get some offense going if you're City. I think there's some pressure on that team to win right now and to get to the playoffs. So they're going to have to, I don't know what they do there, play loose. Klaus suggested maybe just calm down a little bit. I think you take a few gambles, not be so defensive-minded. I don't know. We'll talk about it with Lutz Fan and Steel at 11:15. Dan Reardon's next. We'll talk Masters with him. I love this kind of a day. Sports all over the place. The final round of the Masters in Augusta, Georgia. Dan Reardon next.
Now, back to the Grape Bar Sports on a Sunday morning on 104.1 KMOX. From the Stifel Financial Sports Studio, here is Tom Ackerman.
And here is Dan Reardon, our senior golf editor from KMOX, joining us live from Augusta, Georgia. Augusta National, one of the finest pieces of real estate on the planet. How are you, Dan?
I'm fine, Tom, and I'd say given the circumstance, we're at the center of the sports universe this afternoon.
I would agree. Rory McIlroy going for the career slam, trying to get that green jacket that has evaded him for so long. He is so close. And here comes Bryson DeChambeau once again, right on his heels. A repeat of last year's U.S. Open, Dan, and hopefully not for Rory's sake, because Bryson not only chased him down, but Rory missed a couple of shorties that led to that victory, didn't he?
He did, Tom. Although, people are talking about Bryson beat Rory at Pinehurst, and I tweeted out, I said, the truth is that Rory beat Rory at Pinehurst, because Bryson was that final day leader, and Rory caught him and passed him and then gave it back to him. And Bryson made a great up and down to save par at 18, but that was not a run your opponent down. And today is pretty simple. Rory McIlroy is very likely playing the most important round of golf he will play in his entire lifetime. I mean, it's just that simple. You know that. I know that. Rory knows that. And Bryson knows that. And so the person that controls what happens today is the Irishman. If he comes out and plays sort of like he played yesterday, he doesn't have to shoot 66, but plays in the moment, Bryson will not beat him. Bryson scrambled yesterday. John Patrick from Augusta was sitting next to me in the interview room yesterday, and we agreed. Listening to Bryson talk, it sounded like he won the interview room and lost the third round. But the fact of the matter is it sounded like Bryson was trying to talk to himself as much as he was talking to us. So we'll see how that plays out. But this is all in Rory's hands. Bryson cannot really, realistically cannot control this outcome.
You're right. I actually watched this on the Golf Channel, and I'm sure he shared this with you all in any sort of press. But Jack Nicklaus was on there on Thursday after the ceremonial tee shot and once that first round got going, and he shared the lunch that he had with Rory about a week or so ago in Jupiter at the Bears Club, where he said, tell me, shot for shot, what you're going to do at Augusta. And Rory went through the entire course with him, and he said, I didn't say anything, I just listened, and I said, I would not change a thing.
Well, and you know who may be the most important person today? He's not even here at the golf course, because every day that Rory has played this week, his morning begins with a conversation with Bob Rotella. And the sports psychologist has literally nursed him through this round, particularly coming off of the stumble coming in on Thursday and what he was going to do at the start of the round on Friday. And what Rotella told him was, don't try to do it all at one time. And Rory went out and birdied the second hole shot, one under par on the front nine, and then lit up the back nine. And it was that advice from Rotella that allowed him to keep himself in the moment and stay in focus and do all those sorts of things. I'll admit, Tom, I'm rooting for the guy. He's one of the greatest guys in golf right now. There's nothing you could say about him as a person that you could be critical of. And he's earned the right to have that green jacket. But that colors all my analysis of what might take place today is rooting for him.
No, I understand. I pull for these people as well. I'm not around them as much as you, but I have been. And at the PGA Championship, I can tell you that Rory McIlroy treated me like I was a Hall of Fame media person. I mean, I went up to him after one of his practice rounds, and I said, Rory, my name's Tom Ackerman. I'm with KMOX here in St. Louis. Could I ask you a few questions? And he goes, we can do it right now if you want. Just walk with me. And so we walked to the clubhouse. We did an interview right outside the clubhouse. And I said, I think I'm supposed to get someone to take a picture of us for our website. And he goes, let's do a selfie. Wouldn't that be better? And so we, you know, and we, and then he chatted with me. He goes, tell me about your station. I said, the Cardinals, St. Louis Cardinals. He goes, oh, that's awesome. He goes, I've really enjoyed being here. I like St. Louis a lot. And then he went about his way. And I just, you know, little personal touches like that. But I've heard the same has turned for Bryson. You know, he really has made a point to be personal, to reach out, to talk to people and be approachable.
And I've been so impressed with this change in Bryson DeChambeau. He's gone from a very brash, sort of irritating kind of personality, who was very public about everything, to a guy that, you know, has perspective. I sort of think he lost or wasted about 3 or 4 years of his golf career trying to do things that he shouldn't have been doing, but he was bright enough to discover what he needed to do. And let's just talk about the golf. One thing to be aware of is that Bryson has birdied 18 two of the 3 days. 18 is the second hardest hole in this tournament. So he has that sitting in his mind if he's within a stroke or leading. Rory has birdied the third hole 9 times in his career, including twice this week. So, and Rory has, I think, 13 eagles in his career here, including 3 this week. So if he can handle the par fives, if he can do what he has been doing on the par threes, and then the key is, I tweeted this morning, if Rory doesn't have to take a drop, if there's no penalty drops out there, that two-shot margin will be really difficult to overcome. In Bryson's case, he hit 50% of the greens yesterday. He's been hitting 59%. You can't do that. He had 24 putts on Thursday, 25 putts yesterday. You can't do that again today and expect to catch a player of McIlroy's talent if McIlroy is playing anywhere near his potential. And every leader on the final day comes back a little bit. You say, if you just shoot par, you can do this. And a lot of times that leader wins but doesn't shoot par.
An incredible setup today, this pairing Rory McIlroy and Bryson DeChambeau tee off at 1:30 Central Time. A couple of contenders behind them, you know, they seem to be distant. My pick, Ludvig Åberg, hanging in there, made a nice run late in the round yesterday. He's 6 under, 6 shots off the lead. He's paired with Jason Day. Patrick Reed is also 6 under. He and Corey Connors teeing off at 1:20. Connors, what a steady, interesting player he is. He's only 4 shots behind Rory. What do you think about him?
Corey Connors is a really wonderful player, but he would be the star of the LIV Tour because he's the master of the 54-hole format. Hmm. Sundays are not kind to Corey Connors, and I'm not saying that in a harsh or critical way, but it's just his history. It's not particularly good. But I'll throw another name at you, and his form indicates this is never going to happen. But out of the players you've mentioned there, you know the player who I think is the only one somewhere on the leaderboard who could throw a 65 at the field? It's Scottie Scheffler. Mm-hmm. He knows how to play this course. He has played poorly through most of the week. But Scottie is the kind of player who can show up one day and throw, you know, thunder at you. And I think that Scheffler has that in him. But it really is going to come down to these two guys. We know that the winner of the Masters in recent years has come out of that final group. And it's going to do it again today because both of them aren't going to back up to allow Åberg or Connors or Reed or any of those guys to get into this mix. We're in for a great time. You know, I'm going to hopefully spend the front 9 out on the course. I know I'll never see a shot because of the size of the galleries, but you've done this before, I know. I want to experience the galleries going off and see what that mood is going to be. And you have, you know, I did that weird contest this morning, but you do have a Ryder Cup kind of format to this. You have a LIV versus PGA Tour. You have a lot of variables that play well into this situation, and I want to see how the crowd wants to play it. Do we get chance of USA out of them? How is it going to be? It's just a really exciting moment. Hopefully it doesn't disappoint.
I hope it's great. I know that the sports world will be glued to it. The Masters final round today. Rory McIlroy 12 under for the championship. Bryson DeChambeau is 10 under. They go at it at 1:30 this afternoon on CBS. Dan, thank you so much for the time. We appreciate you.
Enjoyed it, Tom.
Thank you. Dan Reardon, our senior golf editor, live from the Masters in Augusta, Georgia. When we come back, we'll be joined by Josh Schertz, the head coach of the St. Louis Billikens, is going to tell us about not one, not two, not three, all 4 players that he has landed so far in the transfer portal. It's going to be, I think, an exciting time down at Chaffetz Arena this coming season. He may have a little more of a team to his liking. He'll explain that next, right here on KMOX from the Stiefel Sports Studio.
On 104.1 KMOX, from the Stiefel Financial Sports Studio, here is Tom Ackerman.
Welcome back. Sports on a Sunday morning on KMOX. What a busy day. Cardinals, Battlehawks, City all playing. Final round of the Masters. We're keeping an eye on hockey for the Blues' sake as they are trying to make the playoffs. There's so much going on, and it is absolutely busy in the portal right now. College basketball is a year-round sport, as you know, and Josh Schertz, the head coach of the Billikens, joins us, as he would very well know. Good morning, Coach.
Hey, Tom, how you doing? Good morning.
Good morning. Good to be with you. And college basketball has wrapped up, but it doesn't mean that the activity has stopped. I mean, it is crazy trying to put together a roster these days.
Yeah, I think actually I tell people the busiest time of year is from the buzzer of your last game to whenever you complete your roster. And, you know, it actually turns into the busiest time of the year as you figure out who's coming back, and then what you need and what that looks like. And as you said, it's a mad dash once the season ends. But you know, you can make a case that it's in some ways the most important time of the year, because certainly the goal is for everybody to assemble a championship caliber roster, and to do that, you got to have obviously elite level talent, you got to have elite character, and you got to have depth. And everybody's rushing to try to put those together.
Absolutely. Let's work our way backwards, because you've announced four players, and I want to get to them in just a minute. But right now, there's still more to do, right? I mean, you're still actively looking, trying to secure some commitments here.
Yeah, no, we're still full speed ahead. We have a big weekend, and, we're trying to put the finishing touches. I think, the 2 years I've had, I think we've done the best job of, in terms of the portal. We've actually been able to get done in mid to late April, and I think the hope is we're on a similar trajectory, but we still got to add a couple more pieces to finalize it.
Well, that's exciting to see how it all turns out, because we all know what your history is at Lincoln Memorial, at Indiana State, and now at St. Louis University, given time and building what you want. And at SLU last year was a good year. I mean, you had some ups and downs for sure. You had some challenges, but let's look at what you've added here. And I'll tell you, one of the players on the floor at Chaffetz Arena was Paul Otieno. I watched it, and you just naturally start thinking about this day and age. When you watch games, you think, man, Paul Otieno, who's going to go grab him? Quinnipiac. Yeah. I mean, he looked unbelievable to me. And when it's all said and done, he got your attention too, because he is now a St. Louis Billiken.
He really was. It was when you go play somebody, you prepare for them. And I remember I was watching Quinnipiac's previous two games, and I asked, I was like, who is this kid? You know what I mean? Like, I watched them. They played UMass Lowell the game before we played them, and he had 10 offensive rebounds in that game. Not 10 rebounds, but just 10 offensive rebounds. And Paul is, every bit of 6'8", 6'9". 235 pounds. He's unbelievable in terms of his effort, his athleticism, his physicality. He was sixth in the country in offensive rebounding. You know, he's a true center offensively, but he can step out and shoot the basketball. He can handle the basketball, not at Robbie's level, but he does a lot of things there. He's a really good athlete. And then, you can pair him with Robbie, because he can guard fours, he can guard threes, he can take a five. And so, he can guard, he has great defensive versatility, can catch the ball on the seams, monster on the offensive glass. And, I think he blocked more shots this year himself than our entire team did. So in some areas we needed offensive rebounding, shot blocking, physicality, and the ability to give us some versatility to play he and Robbie together, but they can also both play separate of each other. I think that was a home run for us.
What about Quentin Jones, who you were able to grab from Northern Illinois? He's a scorer?
Yeah, Quentin's a really unique player. He led, Northern Illinois was obviously didn't have a great year, but he he himself was terrific. You know, you watch them, they struggled offensively, but he led the MAC in scoring last game. He wound up getting hurt in the first minute and went from first to third, but he led the league in scoring all year. What was impressive is, you know, 46% though from the field on a team that didn't shoot a high percentage, 36% from three, you know, made 54 threes. And then he had 107 assists and only, you know, 73, 74 turnovers. You know, so a great assist turnover ratio. He's got great playmaking skills at 6'5". You know, you always want size and playmaking. He can really handle pass shoot. We think in our system, the way we play, he's got incredible versatility on both ends. But we love his playmaking, love his shooting. He can get by. He's a good defender, and he's a terrific for a guard. He's a plus-plus offensive rebounder. Gets on the glass, averaged, you know, almost five rebounds a game for them as well.
Trey Green from Xavier is a guard there. Tell me about his journey right now, because obviously he didn't get to play a ton this year.
Yeah, so Trey was a guy that, you know, I recruited in the summer of 22. I was recruiting a number of guys on MOCAN when I was at Indiana State. So I saw them probably more than any team, you know, I've ever seen in AAU, just because of, you know, they had, you know, Kyan Evans and Caden Fish and Kennard Davis and Kyle Polk and, you know, all these different guys that we were, Josiah Doetzler. They had all these different guys in Indiana State that we were recruiting. And, so I had to see them play 20 sometimes, and I was at every game at the Peach Jam, and I just loved Trey Green. Obviously, we weren't in a position to recruit him. He was a, you know, a top 60 player in the country, you know, he was, you could just tell. I mean, just our kind of guy. Like, had great toughness, great skill, courageous. He's a smaller guard, but he can get anywhere he wants to on the floor. He's an incredible shooter. He's got a high level of confidence. You know, just can play make, facilitate, finds a balance of him. Went to Xavier, and you know, first year was all rookie team in the Big East. So, you know, I mean, had a really good freshman year for them. You know, and second year, early in the year, you know, he wound up stepping away from the team for some personal reasons. And I think came back and practiced, got a redshirt year for it. But he's a guy that, you know, I think can in this system, I think he can be spectacular. I really do. You know, he's so dynamic. He shoots it with range, can handle it, can get where he wants to, can get a shot anytime he wants to. Is a terrific passer, willing passer, tough defensively. If you're going to have small guards, they got to be able to shoot off the dribble. You got to be able to shoot with range, you know, and he does those things at a high level. He'll have, they're not the same, but he's got, you know, a lot of similar qualities to Isaiah, who obviously was very successful as a small guard for us, both at Indiana State and here at St. Louis. And I think Trey can have, you know, a very, very similar type year for us.
That sounds very encouraging. And then Deion Brown, who's a tough 6'3 guard, does a lot of things well. It kind of sounds like a player that anybody would want on their team, but he also lit up North Carolina for 20 points in a game last year.
Yeah, Deion, you know, we talked about, you know, addressing issues, and we felt like, you know, obviously playmaking was a huge issue for us last year. You know, offensive rebounding, forcing turnovers, getting more athletic, getting faster, getting more skilled, being more athletic, positional size, all those things, a lot of boxes to check. Deion's a unique player. You know, he's, if you rewind it back to the year before at Maryland, Baltimore County, he led the America East in scoring and rebounding at 6'3", averaged 21.4 points a game and 9.6 rebounds a game. Huh. So, you know, pretty remarkable for somebody that size to average basically, you know, 21.4 and 9.6. He's got a great knack for the ball, incredible cutter, really athletic, wired to score, has shot 35% or better all 3 years of his college career from three, is very capable shooting, but great cutting instincts, terrific offensive rebounder, great athlete, plus defender. I think he's got the type of versatility. We're trying to create a roster with the type of versatility that he can play with anybody, but gives us a chance to be more like, you know, what we hopefully had at Indiana State in terms of the versatility, the skill level, playmaking offensively. I think that was, you know, a big reason we turned the ball over so much is how much playmaking responsibility fell onto Robbie and Isaiah. The ability for you know, to disperse that more is a huge thing. The ability to build more depth for, you know, to obviously hopefully play guys less minutes and less being more for a lot of guys. And but Dion's a guy that you know, checks a ton of boxes for us, and started at Boston College, started in the ACC this past year. But you go back to his time at UMBC, and I think he's an electric type player and a fantastic athlete with a huge motor. Our fans will probably see a lot of similarities with Dion and kind of the level of toughness and effort that Dylan Warlick plays with. Just, you know, Dion has a lot of those similar traits, but just is a fantastic athlete on top of that.
And speaking of that, we know of your returnees. One, I think, of note that we would want to ask about here before we go is Kellen Thames. Is there anything you can tell us about his progression?
Yeah, Kellen is just, you know, he's working through trying to figure out exactly from a medical diagnosis standpoint, you know, what he's dealing with. We have some ideas on that. You know, Kellen himself will, you know, I think address those when he's comfortable to. But there's nothing, you know, confirmed. They have some diagnosis that they're researching, looking at. We hope we'll have some answers there. And then once we have like a confirmed diagnosis on what he's dealing with, you know, then we can get to like, what are the next steps? What are the solutions? Is there a solution? Nothing that they're looking at is anything that would be fortunate, anything, you know, life threatening for Kellen or anything like that. It's really just like, what can his basketball career continue? At what level can it continue? And so they're looking at that. And it could be as simple as, hey, he's going to be ready to go next year, and we have contingencies if that's the case, or if there isn't, then we have contingencies in case of that. But regardless of whatever the diagnosis lands on, you know, Kellen's going to be a part of our program next year in some capacity. The capacity just is based on how these test results shake out. And he knows, which, you know, we've got his, you know, his back 100%. We support him, love him, and he's whatever it is, whether he's hopefully in uniform, because man, is he a heck of a player, and would we be so much better if he's able to play and compete? Would we have been? I would have looked a lot smarter last year if he was able to play after the first four games, you know. We hope he can play, but certainly whatever happens, Kellen's going to be a part of our program.
He is quite a talent. Coach, thank you for that update and for all of your updates here. It's been a valuable 12 minutes spent with you here on KMOX. We look forward to our next visit.
Sounds great. Appreciate the time. We'll talk soon and look forward to connecting. Great day for St. Louis sports, so let's go do it.
Yes, it is. We'll take a look at the Blues coming up next. Sports on a Sunday morning on KMOX right after this.
Now, back to the Great Bar Sports on a Sunday morning on 104.1 KMOX. From the Stifel Financial Sports Studio, here is Tom Ackerman.
Back on the show, our producer is Drew Young. I'm Tom Ackerman. We're here until noon. Cardinals pregame at 12:20 with Joe Pott. A lot coming here on KMOX in the next hour plus, sports on a Sunday morning. Here's the lineup for the Cardinals today against Zach Wheeler. It will not be easy, but when is anything easy against the Philadelphia Phillies? Cardinals won the first game, lost the second, going for a series win today. Before we talk some hockey, here's the lineup for the Cardinals. Lars Nootbaar is going to play left field and lead off. Batting second, Alec Burleson, he's the DH. Brendan Donovan will be the shortstop today. He bats third. Nolan Arenado is at third base, batting fourth. Wilson Contreras will bat fifth and play first base. Contreras hitting .132 on the season. Nolan Gorman is in the lineup, playing second base and batting sixth. Jordan Walker is in right field, batting seventh. Joel Pozo behind the plate, batting eighth. And Victor Scott II will be the center fielder and bat ninth today for the Cardinals. The Cardinals have Mason Wynn on the IL. They have a few issues they're trying to sort out in terms of their roster. We'll talk to John Mozeliak about it at 11:30. Right now, we're going to talk some hockey. The Blues are still waiting to make the playoffs. If you stayed up late like me and watched the shootout last night, it was frustrating. Two reasons. One, they couldn't get the goal to win it. But two, I hate that this is coming down to stuff like that, you know? I mean, a shootout, really? This is how we're going to decide whether the Blues go to the playoffs or not? It's not done yet. The Blues need Calgary to lose. Go Sharks. If the Blues lose tonight, or if the Flames lose tonight, the Blues are in great shape and they'll make the playoffs. If not, the Blues need to win that last game in regulation if Calgary keeps winning. We'll see how it all sorts itself out. Let's first hear from Jim Montgomery, the Blues coach. The Blues lost 4-3 in a shootout. They had Nick Leddy with a goal and an assist, Roddick Foxa, Colton Pareko had goals in regulation, Jordan Bennington finished with 14 saves. He was really good in the shootout, but so was Philip Grubauer. 20 saves in the game. He was great in the shootout, and the Blues, for five straight rounds, could not get the final goal to win it, and then they end up watching Chandler Stephenson score it for the Kraken in the seventh round of the shootout. Here's Monty.
Well, you're always glad. You got to grab points. We didn't grab a point last game. If we would have grabbed a point last game, we would have been in real good shape. But we're still in really good shape. We control our own destiny. I think after the Four Nations, if anyone said we could win our last game of the year and we make the playoffs, we'd all take it. You know, so we're in a real good spot because of the effort we've done over the last couple of months.
Just three shots there in the opening period. Did you guys just not have a lot of jump to start the game?
Yeah, I just think we were a little tight to start the game for whatever reason, but we loosened up, and I thought our second period, the first 5 minutes, we started to see Blues hockey, and the entire third. I didn't like how tight we were defensively in the third. I thought we gave them a little bit too much space after we had dominated for quite a bit.
You've played the game. You know what's at stake. How hard is it to deal with the pressure in these games at this time of the year?
If you're immersed in the moment and you're thinking about what you control, which is your next shift and what you're supposed to do, and you're immersed in the details and our habits, then you don't even feel the pressure. This is welcomed opportunity, and that's the way we're looking at it.
Earlier today, you didn't know you were going to have Pareko in the lineup. You get him. He scores a big goal. How did he look?
He looked really good. You know, looks like he's ready to go full tilt again.
There is Jim Montgomery, head coach of the Blues, talking to reporters after the game. So again, the situation is this. If Calgary loses in regulation to San Jose, the Blues clinch. If Calgary beats San Jose, which I'm going to tell you right now, I anticipate them doing. I mean, if they lose to the Sharks and that ends their season, you got to be better than that. Sharks aren't very good. I would think that the Flames are going to win. So if that's the case, then the Blues need to win in regulation to clinch on Tuesday against Utah. And as Jim Montgomery said, if you're going to come home and play Utah and that's to make the playoffs and you control your own destiny, they would take that. The Blues have to go do that. I mean, you play in your home arena, place will be rocking, you go get the job done. If the Sharks get the job done for you tonight, then you don't have to deal with it. But you're probably going to have to deal with it. You're going to have to win your way in, and the Blues do control their own destiny. If Calgary gets a point today, so if they end up losing in overtime or a shootout, the Blues need a point on Tuesday to clinch. But it really comes down to just win the thing in regulation, you're good to go. Good news is they have Colton Pareko back. He has rejoined the team. Here he is.
Prizely addition to the lineup. How did you feel out there?
Felt good, yeah. Just kind of tried to build into last week, and I mean, I guess throughout the whole process, but just last week has been kind of good where you turn the corner and just each practice got better and better. So this morning felt pretty good, so I thought I'd give it a go.
Okay, walk us through your goal. That was a big one there.
Just noticed that they had some guys that kind of got trapped below our goal line, and just tried to jump up in the play, make an odd man rush, and then push it out to Tomer, and Tomer made a great play. I believe it was through the guy's legs, and just tried to make a move, and yeah.
So only three shots for you guys in the opening period. What kind of led to this sluggish start, but as time went on, you guys got going?
Yeah, I think, I don't know, no real reason or I guess for the sluggish start. I think for us as a team, just make sure that when we are playing our best, we get things pucks deep. We're getting two guys on the puck. We're working together and things like that, working as a five-man unit. But I think for our group, that's the biggest thing we need to focus on, is just continue that. And I think in the second and third, we continue to build, like you mentioned. In the third, for sure, we had a great period, I thought, and yeah, it was good.
A big point there. It gives you a chance to control your destiny in this final game. A few months ago, if you'd have said you had a chance to win one game and get in, I would imagine you would have taken that.
Yeah, for sure. Obviously, the group has done a great job over the last month and a bit here, and since the break, and they've been playing extremely well, putting wins together, putting points in the bank, and like you said, win and we're in. So it's in our court. Regroup, couple days here, go home. Regroup and put our best foot forward and give ourselves a good chance at getting into the playoffs.
There is Colton Pareko. Thanks to the Blues for that audio as he talks to reporters late last night, early this morning, after the 4-3 shootout loss to the Seattle Kraken. Nice to have Pareko back for sure. And he, I thought, really guided us through that very well as to how the Blues are handling things right now. And Jim Montgomery, especially, in his positivity, keeping the team focused, even though they've dropped a few games here since their 12-game winning streak, they still feel like they can control their own destiny. They do. And if Calgary does not win today in regulation, they get a point. They're still alive. If they get beat in regulation, it is over. But they're playing San Jose. Let's also look at the Frozen Four from yesterday. I had the best time yesterday. Took my daughter, Erica, who is heading to Miami. I'm wearing the M if you are looking on YouTube or wherever. I've got my Miami pullover. She's going to Miami of Ohio. They have a great college hockey program. Didn't have a great year last year, but they have a great tradition, awesome arena. And they'll be seeing Western Michigan four times. So she wanted to see them up close last night, and did she ever. They won 6-2 over Boston University last night at Enterprise Center, and they claimed the national championship for the first time. It was Western Michigan's first ever trip to the Frozen Four. My view of that arena was just spectacular with all the colors of the different jerseys. I didn't realize that people wear jerseys from all schools. So people bought tickets to the Frozen Four hoping their team would get in, and then they just stayed. Minnesota, North Dakota, Wisconsin, they were all represented there all across the board. You saw teams, fans from different teams. And then, make no mistake about it, the last line of the national anthem, the home of the Blues crowd was loud last night. It was very obvious there were Blues fans in the house last night. Just a great hockey atmosphere overall. It was sold out at Enterprise Center. Great job by the St. Louis Sports Commission and the organizers. Frozen Four in the books. So is the first hour of this show. We'll be back with more after this.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Take me out to the ball game.
What are you doing?
Did you know DirecTV has the most MLB games?
So you're singing.
Yeah, they put your favorite teams front and center right when you turn it on. Buy me some cold cuts and flapjacks.
Those aren't even the words.
I'm allergic to peanuts.
Stream DirecTV, home of the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on sports networks. Availability varies by zip code and package. New customers. Service renews monthly unless you cancel. Choice package required. Restrictions apply.
It's no surprise that facial hair is personal. It grows from your face. Whether you're going smooth shaven or maintaining a beard, Dollar Shave Club offers shave and grooming products that are always high quality, but never overpriced. Visit DollarShaveClub.com and use promo code SHAVEUP for 20% off $20 or more. Do you believe you were wrongfully terminated for speaking up against your employer? Wilshire Law Firm isn't afraid to go up against corporate giants and will protect you every step of the way. Get justice and feel safe. Call the experts at Wilshire Law Firm at 1-800-800-3333.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy. And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
We get the best start to the day because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
Welcome into the Extra Innings Show here on KMOX. The Extra Innings Show is presented by Graybar. Graybar, your distribution for your distributor for electrical and datacom needs. Cardinals fall in this one by a final score of 4-1 to the Phillies. I'm Joe Pott from Busch Stadium, and the Phillies and the Cards now will play a rubber game of this three-game series tomorrow afternoon. I actually want to give you a chance. We do have a little bit of time. I want to give you a chance here to hear some from the Cards starting pitcher today, because I mentioned this. It was not, it certainly wasn't best case scenario probably for Miles Michaelis, but I would certainly say it was much better case scenario. And if you heard the Cards skipper in the postgame show, in the network postgame show, he talked about how much this game looks different if a call goes another way in the first. And I agreed. Kyle Schwarber was at the plate, 3-2 pitch, and it caught the inside corner, the inside high corner of the strike zone, but Dan Iasonia called it for ball four. The inning goes on. Nick Castellanos doubles next at bat into left center field. That brings in two Phillies runs, and that changes the whole complexion of this game. As the Phillies get those two runs, they win it by a final of 4-1 here this afternoon. But let's let you hear from the Cards starter, Miles Michaelis. He was asked what he saw out there, and he did have a lot of swing and miss today, a lot of strikeouts.
Yeah, I threw a 1-2 fastball right down the middle to Castellanos there in the first. That's just the one pitch I need back. You know, that's a mistake that cost us a game right there. But I was able to kind of rein it in and go pretty smooth out there for the rest of the game.
Miles, a lot of calls didn't go your way necessarily in the first inning, but you're able to bounce back and post five after that or four after that. What led to the change and how effective do you think you were outside of the zone?
I tried not to change much there, because I liked how I felt in the first. You know, I thought I was out of it. Going to those chase spots, you know, two strikes, being aggressive. I thought, you know, my results were easily a lot better than last time out. But I felt good about it.
What's the difference between one? I mean, obviously you want to get away from block, but is there something that's different about the two?
I don't think a ton, no. I went back and looked. I made some okay pitches in Boston. They had hot bats. That was kind of tough, and a couple calls, kind of like today, a couple calls either way. Some pitches are close. They're when you're throwing pitches, on the corners, and you've got respected guys up there at the plate, that have a good idea of the strike zone. I know it makes it tough for umpires, and calling balls and strikes got to be the toughest thing in sports. That ball's coming in there pretty quick, and it's moving all over the place. And some of those calls go either way. Some of them go my way, maybe it's a tighter game, but you just got to, and then I throw a pitch right down the middle. So that's on me.
How repeatable was what you did today with the swings and misses, with the pitch and the chase?
I would like to imagine very repeatable, extremely repeatable.
Yeah, I would imagine.
Yeah, I
I mean, you just described fortune bending.
It shouldn't be hard for me to, not throw strikes, but I guess sometimes it's more difficult than you think.
Thank you.
Thanks, Mom.
Miles Michaelis after the game, and I do appreciate the one answer because, we were saying the same thing. I was saying the same thing. The game obviously looks different if the call goes a different way in the first inning. It's the Extra Innings Show, by the way. It's presented by Gray Bar, your distributor for electrical and datacom needs. And yes, it would look different if that pitch goes for strike three. The Phillies do not score two runs there in the first. Maybe they win it 2-1 anyway. But as he said, you still have to execute because those calls are going to happen. It doesn't matter at what point in time. There's going to be calls that don't go your way, which is exactly how he said it. He's going to get calls that go his way. He's going to get calls that don't go his way. I thought the pitch to Lars Nootbaar to end the seventh inning also was missed by Dan Iasonia. It looked like it was inside, but I have much less worry for a pitch like that. If you're Lars Nootbaar, you got to be ready on two strikes to hit there. You've got two on base. You feel like you're in a situation where you can bring in some runs or at least bring in a run, cut into that lead. So I'm worried less about that. The one to Schwarber, I thought he just plain missed. It was there. He missed it. And again, the game changes. But I do appreciate the fact that you've got to come back and execute, as Michael has said. And then he was asked by, I believe it was Derek Gould, asking him about how repeatable is this. That's the million-dollar question right there, right? Can you go out and do this again? And that goes back to what we were talking about in the pregame show. Are there options to make changes? Well, sure there are. There are a couple of young pitchers at Memphis that probably could come up here in McGreevy and Graceffo and be in that spot. But do you want to make that change 2 weeks into the major league season? And the answer is probably not. They are going to extend the rotation out a little bit. So you will see Steven Matz in the rotation next week. So they're just basically adding to it, but they're not ready to make any kind of big decision like removing Miles Michaelis right now. and replacing him either with Mats or replacing him with somebody from Memphis. Not ready to make that, to pull the trigger on that just yet. What's on Deck is brought to you by Chesterfield Fence and Deck, the sign you have the very best, chesterfieldfence.com. What's on Deck is game three of this three-game series, which comes your way tomorrow afternoon. 1:15, first pitch here at Busch Stadium. We're on the air with our network pregame show beginning at 12:20. Matthew Liberatore, 0-1 with a 5.8 ERA, will make his third start of the season. He'll go up against Zach Wheeler, who is 1-0 with a 3.44 ERA. It will be his third start of the season, as well as both teams are looking for a series win. And as I mentioned a little bit ago, the Cardinals are looking for their first series win against the Phillies since 2017. That'd be a nice way to finish off the weekend, to get Zach Wheeler and get that series win. Big thanks to the voice of the Cardinals, John Rooney, to Rick Horton, Mike Claiborne, and Jim Jackson up in the booth here in Busch Stadium. Thanks to Daniel Hinkamp and Matt Rocchio back in the Camo X studio. I'm Joe Pott. Again tomorrow, 12:20 is our pregame show along the Cardinals radio network. 1:15, first pitch, as the Cardinals and Phillies get together. Keep it here on your home of the Cardinals, 104.1 FM, Camo X.
KMOX Sports. This is the Gray Bar Sports on a Sunday morning. Gray Bar, your distributor for electrical and datacom needs. Now, from the Stifel Financial Sports Studio, here is Tom Ackerman.
Sometimes you just feel it, you know what I'm saying?
You got to have that brightening mood.
Yeah, there's a Jack in the Box read that we have at like 6:15 Monday through Thursday that I slow it down. If you notice on the show, I slow it down. I really get into the French toast sticks.
I mean, you're like diving directly in.
And let's get into this breakfast now. Let's break this down in the middle of like a weather forecast into traffic and all this important stuff.
I love behind the scenes, pulling back the curtains here.
You got to do it sometimes. Look, this is an exciting time of year, without a doubt, here in St. Louis. Things are starting to bloom. We have beautiful weather. We have sports going all over the place. This is a great, great time of year. Let me reset what we have going on today. So the Cardinals play at 1:15, 12:20. Let me get to a comment on YouTube. There's all kinds of stuff that pops up all the time on our comments. This one from Space, not actually from outer space, but the person's name is Space on YouTube, said, just for clarity, yesterday, the Cardinals had five double plays against them, so it didn't want so much their offense wasn't good. They just kept getting shut down all game. I think what this person is saying is it wasn't so much that their offense wasn't good. They just kept getting shut down all game. Well, isn't that the definition of the offense wasn't great? They got shut down. I mean, that's my whole point. I said they had nine hits, but they didn't have any key hits, and that's the thing. So they scored one run yesterday, Space. And that's not good enough. It's all about scoring runs. But I appreciate the comment. I understand what Space is trying to say. I just wanted to put Space's comment out there. The Cardinals need some offense. I mean, they need some runs. And they had it early. I knew that was going to happen. I think we all did, that it was going to take a step back and things tend to normalize. Hopefully they can get it going here later today. Elsewhere, we have the Battlehawks. They are playing at 2 o'clock over at the Dome. People are already tailgating for that one. I know that. They gather all outside the Missouri Athletic Club and everywhere else outside the Dome to get ready for the Battlehawks. Anybody hitting all three today? I wonder. Comment on the line here, X or Facebook or YouTube, and let me know if you're hitting all three. I doubt it. But if you are, that would be very, very impressive. And 6 o'clock is City. City takes on Columbus. That's where I will head tonight to go see St. Louis City SC. Lutz Vandensteel is going to join us in 7 minutes, the sporting director, to talk about their team. I'm hearing they practiced with a little more offense in mind, so we'll ask him what that looks like. And if he can pass along any injury updates, we would appreciate that as well. Tonight is the matchup, so we're not going to get the starting group just yet, but we'll find out when the time comes. Y98 has the broadcast for that. Final round of the Masters will get going in a little over 2 hours. 1:30 is the start time for Rory McIlroy and Bryson DeChambeau. Just an excellent pairing right there. McIlroy going for his first green jacket. That would complete a career slam. He has won the other majors, the U.S. Open, the Open Championship, and the PGA Championship. He has yet to win the Masters, and he is on the doorstep. Two-shot lead over DeChambeau going into this final round in Augusta. And as Dan Reardon just said on our air last hour, perhaps the most important round of his life will take place today. We also have kept an eye on hockey. So this table is set for the Blues to make the playoffs. They haven't yet. If San Jose beats Calgary tonight, if Calgary loses in regulation, it is over for the Flames. But the Blues have had a chance to put the Flames away. They've not been able to do it. Last night they gained a point, but they lost in a shootout to Seattle 4-3. So that sets up that scenario where they are up 4 points on Calgary with 3 games to go for Calgary and just 1 to go for the Blues. The Blues can lock it up if Calgary wins tonight in regulation. The Blues need to win in regulation on Tuesday against Utah to drop the hammer on Calgary and make the playoffs. We will keep an eye on all of that, no doubt about it. And then there's just so much going on. I mean, what have we talked about so far here in the last 5 minutes? Baseball, football, hockey, soccer, and golf. And now you can add college basketball because the portal is very active. And we just had an interview with Josh Schertz, the head coach of the Billikens, was with us last hour. On top of all that, you have NASCAR, IndyCar, of course, NBA. There's so much happening right now. And history awaits Denny Hamlin at Bristol Motor Speedway today. The Joe Gibbs Racing driver makes his 400th consecutive start in the Cup Series, 36th of his career at that little track in Bristol. It's a little over a half-mile oval. And he has a circuit-leading 4 victories at that short track. After consecutive victories at Martinsville and Darlington, Hamlin could become the winningest driver in Joe Gibbs Racing history and join teammate Christopher Bell by notching the 2nd 3-race winning streak this season. We'll see if he can pull it off. Nobody seems to like Denny Hamlin. He's like the, you know, evil guy. He's everybody's enemy. He's the villain of the NASCAR Cup Circuit. But that's okay. You want a villain, do you not? You want a villain in sports. And that's exactly what he has become. Kyle Kirkwood is on the pole of the IndyCar Series. And he is looking at Long Beach today. That should be interesting. The streets of Long Beach as Andretti Global step forward to make a statement by locking out the front row in qualifying for the Acura Grand Prix of Long Beach. That sounds like fun to be able to take all that in. I'd love to go to something like that. We have IndyCar coming to St. Louis Father's Day. That is what's happening at Worldwide Technology Raceway. Here in St. Louis, we have some major stuff coming. First of all, the Bomarito Automotive Group 500, it happens every year, but they are moving it back just a bit. It is not in May now. It is in June. So go to WWTRaceway.com, and you can check out the schedule for that. They have the IndyCar race on Father's Day this year. That weekend is June 14th and 15th, and as they like to say, it's not just a race. It is a spectacle. It's a wild festival, if you will. And they have NASCAR as well this year. So Worldwide Technology Raceway, their track schedule is very, very busy. And they have on their oval IndyCar, NASCAR, not to mention Formula Drift and all those other things that they have. But this year is a major, major event. They have the NASCAR Cup Series, the Enjoy Illinois 300, on Sunday, September 7th. It is a playoff race this year. So make sure that you have your tickets locked up for that because that'll sell out. People are already scooping up tickets for that. September 7th, NASCAR, weather is going to be amazing for the Enjoy Illinois 300. Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll talk some soccer. Lutz Fan and Steel, St. Louis City SC next.
Now, back to the Gray Bar Sports on a Sunday morning on 104.1 KMOX. From the Stifel Financial Sports Studio, here is Tom Ackerman.
We are on FM now and AM. We still have the 1120 signal if you like the throwback sound, but we are 104.1 FM and it is rolling really well. Now, just down the dial, 98.1 FM, Y98 will have the game today, St. Louis City SC against Columbus. And joining us to talk about it is the sporting director for City, Lutz Pfannenstiel, is back on KMOX. How are you, sir?
I'm good. What about you?
I'm doing great. I'm going to the City game tonight. I'm excited about that. I have some friends in town, and we're going to go have a blast. My question is, how has the practice been this week? And I'm hearing that it was a little more offensive-minded. Is that true?
Yeah, definitely a good week of training. You know, I think it was a lesson learned from last week against Sporting. And I think this week we worked a lot on structural things when it comes to, get things together, play, I would say, as hard, as physical as we can. Let's not forget Columbus at the moment, probably the top team in the country, definitely a very difficult opponent. But, you know, I think we definitely want to give the fans a good show today. I think they deserve after having not scored for three games, they deserve a really good, good performance and a hard-working performance from the boys.
Without giving away strategy to the opponent, how do you get yourself into an offensive mindset? We know this team is good defensively, Lutz. I'm just curious how you do that generally in the sport. Do you try to take more risks? Does it take a gamble or two to get yourself free? How do you create more offense?
You know, I think you have to look at it from a what we have available. And it's basically, we have the same, very similar squad than last year. So we do have attacking power. I think it's also very important that bringing in a new manager, it takes statistically around 10 games into the season till really everything falls into place and everything is gelled. I think Olaf Melberg did a great job by getting this defensive organization really spot on. We still... The team in the whole country which conceded the lowest amount of goals, and then you work in training, every day and every moment now to improve the smaller things, and you know it's sometimes just one or little tweaks in the setup, being a bit higher, making one or two changes. I mean that's all tactical nuances which can change immediately momentum, and I think we have to look into the positives as well, what we had definitely in the start of the season. And I think that is what we have to build up on, but also look into the negatives, what happened that we just didn't score any goals in the last three games. There is a home game now, you know, at home we should be, I would say, pushing to be strong, pushing also to dominate. And yeah, as I said, Columbus will not be a pushover for sure. It's a top team. We are not the favorites, but I think that underdog mentality and that workhorse mentality always helped us in the past, and I think we are up for it.
And we've seen you before. We've seen you rise to the level of your opponent and take down some really good teams in the past, and this will be a big one here tonight. I think the crowd definitely will do its part. It's 6 o'clock. They'll be rocking and rolling. I think that those night games are even better than the day games at Energizer Park. Lute said that no one would argue your defense. I mean, defensively, you have been terrific. What's been the key there? From my view, you just defend really well as a unit. It's not all about one person. This is a team effort for sure.
Yeah, it's organization, it's structure, and you know, I mean, defending is not just the goalkeeper or the defenders or the defensive midfielder. Like, it starts actually with the attacker, how to really get into a pressing moment, how to close down the spaces. So even the strikers, they need to do defensive work. I think this is very important in professional football, and the best teams in the world have strikers who are not just standing up there waiting for the ball and score a goal and celebrate. They also need to do hard work against the ball. They need to be a member of the team. And I think that is definitely something very positive, what we built into our culture, to be just very difficult to break down by the opponent. But then again, you know, on the upside, we also need to be able to create more chances. And when we do get the chances, we need to score them. Like last week in Kansas, we had 3-4 fantastic chances, but we didn't score first, and then you get punished, and that is something we need to work on, finishing, trying to get some some good passing movements up front, make the right runs behind the defensive line and trying to create and trying to also, I would say, create the momentum to get the fans behind us and feel like there's 12 against 11 out there today.
You are going to be missing some people today. Berkey, for one, and then I count, tell me if this is right or what you can comment on. Leuven, Nilsson, Totlin, Horn, and Durkin, right? All won't be able to play today?
Yeah, plus another one or two players which had long-term injuries. So, yeah, you know, mm-hmm. we are basically eight men down, which is a big number. We are definitely, I would say, again, from the normal projected starting 11, we're probably six players down, which is always, it's tough. But then again, you know, you're having a depth in the squad and the young players and the players who haven't played that much, they need to step up. We called up two guys, young players from City 2 as well today, with Matai Joyner and Brendan McSorley, having two players up who really deserve it, to training with the first team a lot and hopefully getting an opportunity to show themselves as well. But that is what it is, you know. We can't now we can't complain about injuries all day long. Yes, they are there, and we just have to find a way to make things work. Lots of the players are on the verge to come back, so they are not too far away now from 100% fitness, which will ease it in the weeks to come. But yeah, we are not lucky when it comes to injuries, but you know, sometimes you have to fight that. And I think attitude, mentality, hard work. You can cover that.
Is the timeline the same on Berkey? Is he healing up as expected?
He's healing up very well. So everything is exactly like projected. You know, it's not a muscle injury where you having sometimes little things can change it. It's a pretty straightforward thing in his hand. And I'm pretty confident that not too far away he will be back between the posts.
And how are you doing? I know that last week when we talked after the Sporting KC game, you admitted being really down about it. I mean, obviously, you don't like losing ever. But you sound with a little pep in your step here. I mean, I know these weeks, week to week, Lutz, it's not easy to be in your position or in any position.
You know, the transfer list is closing on April 23 in the first primary window. Which is something we're looking at. Yeah, I mean, I don't think I sounded down. I just was pissed off, to be honest. I think which is normal, and I think it would be shocking if I wouldn't be. So that's something where you're letting it sit for 24 hours. You come back on Monday into the office and you sit down and you analyze what happened in this game, what was good, what was bad. And you have to look forward. You know, it's no point now to look back and cry all day long because we haven't scored in the last three games. Well, the only thing that we can do in change is to score a goal today, or score two, or score three, and it's very well change again. Well, I would say the atmosphere around. I feel that people getting anxious. I feel that fans are not happy, but that's expected. You know, we started well, and we had now the first dip of the season with three losses. And that's up to us now to work against that and get back on a winning track. And then people getting happy. And, well, I mean, you know sports just as well as I do. It's all about winning. And you can't win everything. But what you can expect is that when you're out there on the field, you work your socks off, you work as hard as possible. And I think this is what people want to see and what people believe in. And I think this is St. Louis sports culture. So at least always be present and try as hard as you can. And I think you get rewarded in the end of the day, Tom.
I agree. And I think that, you know, the energy, and this is the last thing, is that the energy in that place is always special. And whether it's things are positive, things are negative, or there's anxiousness or whatever it is, that place really pops when you get it going. And that could lift you further beyond this. But I always feel that when you walk in the place, there's a different kind of energy about Energizer Park, and I know I just threw your sponsor in there as well. But it's true.
No, I mean,
it's true.
It just works well. I mean, yeah, what do you expect? If it's called Energizer Park, there must be a lot of energy. So I think that fits very well together as well. So I hope that the boys running today like the Energizer Bunnies, and then I think we have a good chance.
I think it's going to be a fun day. I'll be over there. I look forward to it. Always love walking through those doors. Have a great day today. We'll see you tonight.
Yeah, give me a wave. I come up to say hi.
I will. Lutz Vandensteel, great to hear from the sporting director of St. Louis City SC with us on KMOX's Sports on a Sunday morning. The sporting director for City to the president of baseball operations of the Cardinals. John Mozeliak joins us live next from Busch Stadium. Cardinals and Phillies at 1:15. You're listening to Sports on a Sunday morning from the Stiefel Sports Studio.
Now, back to the Graybar Sports on a Sunday morning on 104.1 KMOX. From the Stiefel Financial Sports Studio, here is Tom Ackerman.
Great to be with you. What a gorgeous day for baseball. Let's go to Busch Stadium. President of Baseball Operations, John Mozeliak, is with us in his 11:30 slot here on Sports on a Sunday morning. Good morning, Mo.
Good morning, Tom. How are you?
I'm doing great. It's great to be with you. And the Phillies are in town, and you're going for a series win. This has been a hard-fought series so far. Let's go back to game one, a 2-0 win. Super impressive performance by Andre Pallante. He just takes the ball and says, I'll show you seven strong innings right here. That was really good.
It's always great to get a strong start after an off day because then your bullpen really benefits from that. So, that yeah, it was great to see. He was in command, had the ball on the ground, was in pitcher counts, wasn't finding himself in defensive counts. And so, yeah, it was just what you'd hope to see, and he did it. He executed.
It was some game, and I looked up, and Pedro Pajes was playing second base. I'm like, whoa, what just happened? How did that go down from your perspective?
Well, I had gotten word that Mason was experiencing a back spasm, so we knew that there was a possibility, and just, you know, trying to figure out really how to run your lineup throughout that game, I thought, you know, it's a very traditional, old-fashioned National League game from the past, and so I thought Ollie and his staff did a wonderful job on that, and, you know, the one thing I would say that most of our catchers kind of inherited from Yadier Molina was, and you know this, when our team's like taking batting practice or infield, Yadi was always an active participant in the middle of the infield. And I think he's really made our younger catchers realize that, you know, taking ground balls is a good thing. And you don't think you're ever going to get called into service in that particular case, but, you know, interesting enough, he did. And he made us proud because he did a nice job.
He did, and you won the ball game, and the Cardinals had the Phillies, who are a really good team, down for one day, and then Saturday showed up, and your offense has been quiet. You know, you lose that game to the Pirates, that gut-wrenching 13-inning game, mostly because the offense couldn't deliver. You got the two runs enough on Friday, but how did you see Saturday's game from that perspective? You had moments but weren't able to cash in.
Well, I think five double plays kind of speaks volumes in this particular case. So we were definitely getting runners on, but in this particular case, we weren't able to score. And, you know, in this game, that's what matters most. I always kind of like remind myself, it's not about the hits, it's about the runs. So you've got to get them across the plate. And when you create five ground ball outs that really end up being 10, and you only have 27 in a game, you know, that's over a third, so that's it's tough to have success that way.
Absolutely. What are you seeing in Wilson Contreras? Is he starting to turn the corner at all?
You know, I certainly hope so, but I think it's been, you know, a frustrating season. Here's a guy that was swinging a very hot bat in spring training and just entered the season with a lot of confidence, and then he's hit into some hard outs, but he's also, you know, not really where he needs to be from his swing standpoint. And I know they're working on it hard, and I think he knows what he has to do, but he's, you know, got to consistently do it. And obviously, if we could have that bat that we expect to have, you know, that would definitely help this offense.
It hurt to lose Herrera, obviously. What's the latest on Ivan's comeback?
You know, I spoke with him briefly this morning. He's encouraged about where he is, but you do have to be patient with this type of injury. If you go too fast, you could end up costing yourself a lot longer. So we're just trying to be smart about this, but you're right. I mean, he was obviously a key member of our offense prior to the injury. So definitely disappointing, But hopefully you remind yourself it's a long season and we get him back.
Mason's injury obviously was enough to put him on the IL. It doesn't sound serious, though. How is his back spasm situation?
The big thing is you can't go 4 or 5 days playing short. So ultimately, the fact that position player IL is 10 days, it just made more sense to allow him to heal. And then I do believe we will get him back in short order.
That's John Mozeliak, Cardinals President of Baseball Operations, updating us here on KMOX about a number of things going on. And, you know, when I look at the Cardinals situation there when it comes to the IL and some players that have gone down, I look at the pitching staff and this rotation right now, you know, I don't know what you think of the depth right now in Memphis and if it's, let's say, touchable. I'll explain what I mean. If I were to take Michaelis out of this rotation, he was better yesterday, granted. But after what I saw at Fenway, I'm like, oh, man, I don't know how much longer they can go. How is it way too early in the season to think about McGreevy? Because I asked Ollie about it, and he responded in somewhat that way, that this might be a little early to tap into Memphis.
Well, I don't think we need to. I mean, I certainly understand your fanboy frustration with Michaelis that day. I mean, I get it. But, you know, he has eaten a lot of innings over the last few years for the St. Louis Cardinals. And so I think we do have to be a little bit patient with him. Yesterday, I think it was one of his stronger outings, really, in the last few years. So, you know, you don't want to just make knee-jerk reactions just because one bad outing. Having said that, we are trying to get Matt's in the rotation to go with a six man, just to give everybody a little bit of a breather as we are in the early stages of this season. And then in terms of how McGreevy's throwing and what we're seeing out of him in Memphis, it's very encouraging. But that's what you need is depth down there. And ultimately, you know, McGreevy will be up here at some point because that's just the nature of this business. And so all I would say is that, you know, it's our job to try to get the most out of what we have right now. And I was really encouraged with how Miles threw yesterday, and hopefully he's able to repeat that.
He was a lot better. The fanboy reaction. I get it. I'll admit it. I did not look at the long term as much as I normally do. Knee-jerk reaction. I saw him, you know, not missing many bats. But he's never really been that way. He's never been a miss-bat guy. He's got to get the contact.
That's why yesterday was so encouraging, because he was getting some swing and miss yesterday. He was getting strikeouts. And I think, you know, that is a very strategic thing they're working on downstairs. And to see him execute on it, that's what you hope to see.
Meanwhile, the Cardinals pushing forward with the Philadelphia Phillies today and Matthew Liberatore. What did you think of his last outing where he was able to recover and give you, what was it, 6 1/3?
Well, again, it's, you know, when you look at our rotation, all these guys have stopped. You know, when you put it on relative to, like, you know, some of the more elite pitchers in the game versus some of the more consistent pitchers in the game, if these guys can stick to a plan that they come up with, they should have success. You know, obviously the Phillies, it's a real lineup. It's a tough one. And so navigating that is always a challenge for any pitcher. But, you know, I think where Libby's at, you know, the reason he got put into our rotation was just the type of spring he had, the type of stuff he has, and we do think he's capable of having success. And so if he can maintain his strategy today and stick to it, I do think he can have success against a lineup like the Phillies.
And as we whip around the different parts of this team, let's close with the bullpen appropriately. And, you know, the bullpen, for the most part, you've had some pieces I think that you like. The Roycroft to Memphis in exchange for Munoz, let's say. What did you think of that? And I'll add on to that the emergence of Kyle Leahy and what you thought of him.
Yeah, a couple thoughts here. Obviously, Munoz stepped into a pretty high leverage situation yesterday and was great. Was able to get two strikeouts, and that was great to see. And touching on Roycroft real quick, you know, here's a guy that when you just look at him on paper, it's like a guy that you think should be a dominating reliever. But, you know, he finds himself where he kind of spins off the ball probably a little bit too much, finds himself in too many hitter counts, so he's falling behind. He's putting a lot more pressure than he needs to do. So he needs to get more consistent with his breaking stuff and his fastball, candidly. If he does that, you'll see him back here. But his stuff is great when he uses it properly, but he's got to get more consistent. And then in terms of Mr. Leahy, he was always somebody that we were excited about. Probably got him to the big leagues a little bit quicker than we probably in a perfect world. But that experience, I think, is paying off for him now. And it's been nice to see the contributions he's making. And, you know, I'll speak on behalf of Dusty, our pitching coach, but, you know, he really does love this guy. He thinks he's a real talent. And I do think you're going to see him in higher leverage situations as the season goes on.
I just got a text from someone that said, did Mo just call you a fanboy? And no, he didn't. He said fanboy react. He's saying that I reacted like a fan. That's what you're saying.
Exactly. And look, fans have, I understand that, but we have to look at through a set of lenses that isn't always the most popular, which is probably why I'm not the most popular at this job anymore. But like, those are the tough decisions. And, you know, you make commitments to players and you gotta give them a long enough runway to find out if they can make those changes.
Absolutely right. We appreciate you. Thank you for the time. Thanks for spending it with us as always on Sports on a Sunday Morning. Have a great day.
You as well. Thank you.
Cardinals going for a series win today against the Philadelphia Phillies. 1:15 start. When we come back, Bernie Miklas joins us to wrap up the hour. You're listening to Sports on a Sunday Morning from the Stiefel Sports Studio.
From the Stiefel Financial Sports Studio, here is Tom Ackerman.
Great to be with you, and always great to be joined by my friend Bernie Miklas, sponsored by Saliga Heating and Cooling, an American Standard heating and air conditioning dealer. How are you, Bernie?
I'm doing good, man. Looking forward to watching Cardinals baseball, and then I will have when I have the Masters on, I'll probably listening to the radio feed, KMOX 104.1. Looking forward to a great day of sports, Tom Ackerman.
Atta baby. I'm heading to the City game tonight to cap it all off. Went to the Frozen Four last night. It was cool to see all the fans milling about downtown. Downtown has some life right now, Bernie. It's good.
I just love it when big NCAA events are here. And, you know, for a while there, like the NCAA tournament was, St. Louis was getting something, you know, either a regional or like the first two rounds. It seemed like every year, I'm exaggerating, but I don't remember, but it I would say three out of every 4 years. And I kind of miss those days because you use the phrase fans milling around downtown. And that's the thing that's awesome about it. It's a lot of people downtown. It's good for business, but also just to see everyone dressed in their team gear, whatever it is, it's colorful. You know, everyone's in a good mood. Everyone's fired up. I mean, it's just a fun thing to see on the city landscape.
Occasionally, I'll get John Mozeliak fired up. I don't know if you caught the last segment, but when I mentioned that my thought after the performance at Fenway on Sunday night was, how long can they keep Michaelis in this rotation? He said, well, your fanboy reaction was blah, 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 blah. I guess he can say that after Michaelis pitches better on Saturday, and my phone starts blowing up during the segment. So I told him on the air, I said, people are saying, did you just call me a fanboy? And I said, no, what you said was I was reacting like a fan. It was an interesting reaction from Mo. Look, Mo and I have known each other a long time, so I don't take offense to it. It's totally fine. But I think this is him kind of slapping back at everybody who wanted to throw Michaelis out of the rotation, including me.
You know, well, John Mozeliak can say whatever he wants, right? And I'm glad that he's on KMOX Sports on a Sunday Morning every week. And I commend all of your regulars who run teams or coach teams or whatever. But the fact is, you know, Miles Michaelis, statistically, over the last three seasons, if you go by ERA rate, he has been a bottom five starting pitcher in the major leagues. So, you know, I appreciate the way he pitched yesterday. I truly did. You know, I was better. I thought he got some bad breaks with the strike zone. So no one's rooting against Miles Michaelis, but for anyone to sort of see that, including Mo, that it's people that say, well, you know, the Cardinals can do better in their rotation. And to be called a fanboy, that's, you know, kind of unfair considering there is an overwhelming body of evidence that says Miles Michaelis has not been very good at all since the start of the 23 season.
It's funny because, you know, well, I'll move on, but we could sit here all day and talk about that. I think just overall this baseball team here is going to go through this all year. I mean, it's just not. Look, the offense is what it is. We said it last week. I said it on Monday that it's just not going to go that long like this.
No.
You know, it's going to regress, and it has. It just is what it is. The pitching is going to go through ebbs and flows too, Bernie.
Yeah, and I was looking at some numbers, you know, in advance of being on with you, and the Cardinals have already gone into this cycle, which is not unexpected, where you can't get the offense and the pitching synced at the same time. Like, for example, the last five games, the starting pitching and the all pitching the last five games has been totally outstanding. Like today, Libitor will complete the third cycle of this rotation. And going into today, the third cycle has a 1.57 ERA. You can't ask for anything better than that. But in the second cycle of the rotation, the second turn through, they had a 0.48 ERA. The first time through, they had a 3.29 ERA. So you see, it gets to your point. You know, I think we're going to see these pretty, you know, dramatic situations. And to close the point, you know, at a time where the third time through the rotation, so far it's been excellent. But in the last five games, the Cardinals are averaging 2.6 runs to 230, and they're 10 for 50 with runners in scoring position. So if they can ever get these two, the offense and the pitching synced at the same time, or it's not going to happen at the same time all the time, but if they can get it synced more often, then I think it'll be reflected in a better one-loss record.
I'm going to have way less patience this year than ever because I just want to see young players succeed. I think that's the whole point of this season. I just don't want to sit here on the air every day, Bernie, and mislead people and say the Cardinals are a game and a half out of first in the NL Central. Like, when in my heart, I don't believe that they are going to be a world champion. I think that, you know, if everything is lucky and comes together and everybody takes off, then they have a chance to really make some noise in the division. But otherwise, I really just want to look at this season as, do we see improvement from young players? I mean, you know, a player like Miles Michaelis is what he is. You know, Contreras, you want to see better, and Arenado, I got it. But like these young players, that's how I judge 2025. And the more young players I can see, the better. But isn't this all about that?
It should be. Yeah. And, you know, if you look at the young players, the guy that is, I think, has impressed all of us the most is Victor Scott II so far. I mean, he's just an entirely different hitter. He's so composed. He's so mature. He's so smart at the plate. He really worked his tail off to become better. And I'm just so happy for him. Jordan Walker is an interesting case because he's kind of tapered off a bit and he's hitting the ball on the ground a lot. I don't mind him hitting the ball on the ground, but you know, his ground ball rate right now would be the highest of his career. You know, and he's hitting a lot of topped ground balls where he just kind of pounds it into the grass. And so I'd like to see more power from him. I'm just analyzing this objectively. Jordan Walker takes much better at bats, and that's a start. But now he's got to start hitting for some hard contact. He's got to start driving the ball a little bit. Burleson, if we still consider him young, which he is, he's kind of a mixed bag as well. Like he makes great contact, but he also makes contact with pitches outside of the strike zone. And his numbers, when he does that, and he does that too often, it's one. Okay, great. He makes contact, but what does he get out of it? He gets about a 125 batting average out of it. And who else? Well, Gorman, we haven't seen enough yet. I'm impressed by what we've seen from Sejacy, certainly. And Herrera, before he got hurt, was doing great. And I got to say, Pedro Pages, and I consider him young because this is his second year in the big leagues. He's been impressive. I mean, I think his offense has improved. And I know Ali Marmol and some others were saying, hey, don't sleep on this guy turning into a pretty good hitter. So I probably left a guy or two out of there, but I was just going to sort of going down the rundown with you what we see so far from their core of young hitters.
Anything else you'll be watching for today and beyond with regard to the Cardinals?
Well, I tell you, yeah. And again, I'm not overreacting to things. It's the ebb and flow of the season. It's the ebb and flow of the season. But in his Nolan Arenado got off to a great start, and it was really exciting. But in his last six games, he's 2-for-21. He hasn't, he homered on opening day, and he's going his last 45 at bats without a homer, and he's only had a couple of like in that 2-for-21. Both of those hits were singles, I believe. So I think we're all going to be watching Nolan Arenado very closely. You know, we're going to talk about when he's hitting well, and we're also, you know, need to talk about when it's not going well, and it kind of reminds us a little bit of last year. So his bat speed's better, so I would expect better results, but he's in a bit of a downturn now, and if we talk about this offense getting better, I think Arenado's got to be in the middle of that.
Cardinals and Astros tomorrow, Tuesday, and then Wednesday day game, then they just keep on rolling. They're going to play the Mets for four and then the Braves for three on the road, so it doesn't get any easier for the club, but hey, this is the big leagues, and that's just the way it is. Cardinals,
Yeah, the NL Central, again, it's way too early to look at standings, but every one of these NL Central teams, including the Cubs, they're sorting things out. There's some things that are good. There's some things that are eh. There's some things that stink. So the Cardinals are not that different from the other teams in the division.
Always great to be with you, my friend. Sponsored by Saliga Heating and Cooling. We have the Gas House Gang coming up this week. Ollie Marmol joins us every Tuesday at 12:05. I love that segment. He's been very open and honest with us, and we appreciate him. So looking forward to all of that.
And you can read all my stuff and watch my videos at sportshubstl.com. Thank you, Tom.
You are a busy man, by the way. How do you keep it all straight? Are you going to hire an assistant?
I keep it all straight by getting up at about 5 in the morning every day. I do. I'm not kidding. So
you no. Should. I'll be up. I'm on the air at 5:05. Just text me. We'll go through it.
So I got, I'm going to do a Cardinal territory with Katie Wu tonight at about 8 o'clock, you know? So yeah. I'm keeping busy, man. It keeps my mind sharp.
I love it. I love this Bernie Miklas franchise right now. It makes me very, very happy. Absolutely.
Nice of you to say, man. Thanks, it makes me happy too. Thank you, brother.
Appreciate you. With our producer, Drew Young, I'm Tom Ackerman. This has been Sports on a Sunday Morning on KMOX. Cardinal Baseball's next.